Welcome back to Forbidden Knowledge News. I'm your host, Chris Matthew. Tonight, my guest is N.K. Kranda. Before I bring her on, I want to remind you, you can always get new regular episodes free on Rockfin, Odyssey, and all popular podcast platforms. Be sure to leave us a good review on Apple when you're on there. Definitely check us out on Rockfin. It's where you get all of our premium content, our regular shows, and all of the amazing premium content from all the content creators on Rockfin. We also have our merch store up. That means you can get awesome t-shirts, stickers, bags, mugs, and all kinds of awesome stuff. That link's in the description or fknstore.net. And finally, check out the great products at Ascent Nutrition. They are an awesome all-natural health and nutrition company. Not only do they have supplement categories like vitality, energy, healthy metabolism, and detoxification, you're going to see brain and focus and intuition and consciousness. I've been taking the nootropic focus, and my focus and attention is really off the charts. If you're ready to optimize your meat suit, check out Ascent Nutrition. Tonight I want to welcome N.K. Kranda. She went to school for horticulture sciences and graduated with highest honors. She then continued her education in the fields of psychology, PTSD and trauma therapies, art, biology, physics, history, and shamanism. She currently works in experiencer research and preservation and has the honor of interviewing some of the most incredible people the field has to offer. Her interests in contactees and experiencers began when she volunteered as a MUFON chapter secretary in San Antonio. After writing way too many reports, she found her true interests were in the people that quietly came to meetings to tell an incredible story. She taught them to fight stigma and never stop telling their story and to honor themselves because they survived. N.K., welcome. How are you doing tonight?
I am wonderful, Mr. Matthew. It is so good to hear your voice again.
Yes, it seems like we just talked a couple of times, and it was great meeting you last month at the conference. You had such a great, unique presentation, and I really think that we need more of this kind of information in our community. Your presentation was Trauma and the Experiencers, Exploring the Science, the Philosophy, and Reality of the Relationship Between Trauma and the People Who Experience the Phenomenon. Like I said, I've never heard anything like this at any of the conferences I've been to before, so I was really intrigued the information that was being presented, and I want to talk a little bit about that amongst a bunch of other rabbit holes that we could go down. But since this is your first time here on the show, I'd love for us to hear a little bit more about what kind of brought you down your current path. Were you always interested in paranormal?
I've always been an experiencer. I just didn't know about it until I was almost 30. Basically, just strange occurrences all my life. I didn't really think it was a big deal. And then I got really into David Paulides and Missing 411. And I found out that he went to something called a symposium every year. So I was completely and utterly fascinated with Missing 411. And I just wanted to learn more about this stuff. And ended up going to a San Antonio MUFON chapter meeting. I volunteered as a secretary, and I was a fully licensed an investigator. That's a lot of hard syllables right there. It's okay. But the way that we would talk to experiencers was just, it was not okay. These people would come in and they were obviously going through something and just wanted to maybe get some clarity or some validation or some support. And we would stick a mic in their face and go, here, tell your story. And then people would openly whisper about them and say that they didn't believe them or ask them inappropriate questions. And I would always offer, I would say, you know, if you want to wait until after the meeting's done, I'll make time for you and I'll have a cup of tea and we can talk some more if you like. So that's really how I got started with, you know, one-on-one with experiencers. And, you know, I was just getting really great information and I was wondering if anybody was writing it down, and they said no. There I am, the story keeper.
Nice. Now, you said you're an experiencer yourself. Could you kind of let us know a little bit about what your experiences were? Were they from childhood? Anything you could share with us?
So I'm what's called a multi-phenomena experiencer. So I've had everything from a near-death experience to brushes with the paranormal to brushes with what I believe to be other dimensional entities. It's a pretty impressive mixed bag. A lot of weird stuff has happened to me.
Now, did this start like since how old was your first experience that you can remember?
My first experience that I can remember very clearly was, I think I was 7 or 8, and I was in a church, and my mom was in a meeting with the pastor, and there was this big long conference table, and I had one of those great big shooter marbles, like, you know, when you're a kid and you're like, yeah, marbles. So I was rolling this marble back and forth across the table, kind of running around to catch it. And pretty soon something actually started interacting with me, and it was manipulating the marble and like figure eights and making it just go in all kinds of ways. And, you know, I was a smart kid. I'm like, the table's not crooked. There's no divot here. I'm like, I'm gonna trick this thing. I'm gonna shoot this marble right across the table and it'll fall. And, you know, I'm just being silly. So I took it and I rolled it as hard as I could along that table. And when it should have smashed into the wall, just from my sheer momentum and, you know, enthusiasm, it stopped. And it rolled back to me and just kind of stopped in the middle of the table. And I was so amazed and I was so thrilled. And I pretty much ran down the hallway and drop kicked the poor pastor's office door down. And, you know, just to share my excitement, I'm like, mom, you got to come see this. You got to come see this. And she just immediately dismissed me and told me, oh, honey, the table's crooked. And, you know, kind of dampened my enthusiasm, but I still remember it to this day very vividly. So I think I started around 8 is the first one I can remember very clearly.
Were most of your experiences positive or negative or kind of like a mixed bag?
I feel like I've had a pretty even balance between the two. But then again, there's also, I don't know everything and I don't understand everything. So some things that I may see as, you know, bad or misconstrued as scary, maybe it's just something I'm not quite familiar with yet.
Now, you had experiences since you were 8. Did these kind of lessen any in kind of intensity as you grew up, or do you still experience strange phenomena?
So there was a period in my life where I actually, I shut all of my sensitivities down. I was a very sensitive kid. I think I was probably a full-blown empath at some point. I was just so in tune with adults, and, you know, there's like, oh, you must have overheard us talking. And I'm like, no, I know what you're feeling. Please stop lying to me. But I came from an abusive family, and, you know, being an empath and feeling that much more of everything, I just went within myself and I shut it down. And I pretty recently went back and I was like, all right, universe, like, let's put on the Moldavite, hold my beer, let's do this. And it really picked back up again. It's great. And almost every time I do one of these, or I talk to an experiencer, you know, it's an interactive phenomena. So something weird will happen. Something's going to come knock on my door, touch my feet.
That's really cool. Yeah, I find that for myself, I never had an experience. I never experienced anything for myself. I never even seen a UFO, but I've always been fascinated by this subject. And one day I had to experience it myself, because, you know, I've been doing this for years, talking to all these people who have experienced it. And I just wanted my proof and knowing. And I went out and I got it. I definitely got that proof. So, and I think you and I were talking about that at the conference. If you're going to go looking for it, it's probably going to come and find you, right?
Yeah. So I always tell people to be careful. Careful what you wish for.
Definitely. So now let's talk a little bit about what you do with your preservation, the preservation of the experiences. What's your approach like whenever you're interviewing people about their experience?
So I'm very gentle. To me, this is it's a peer-to-peer relationship where equals. I'm talking as you and as an experiencer to an experiencer. One of the things that always irritates me is the egotism in UFOlogy. and people can get really nervous and scared, like, oh, I'm talking to this really famous writer, a really famous researcher, but you get such a better account and there's so much more calm and you can actually make a genuine connection just because, you know, we're on the same level. I'm right here.
Now, what kind of experiences do you work with, and kind of tell us, do you just write everything down in a journal, or how do you preserve everything?
So it depends. Sometimes people will come up to me in a store and they'll tell me about a near-death experience and then disappear. Other times I'll get emails that are extremely detailed. Sometimes I'll get anonymous emails. Sometimes when I can, I choose to meet up with people like in a quiet cafe or something. And I have a digital recorder and I also take notes as long as they're okay with it. And if I start to notice that they get uncomfortable or anything, you know, I put all that stuff away and we just talk person to person. So I have everything from digital preservations to photographs to actual file holders to notebooks. So a house fire would not be good.
And this would cover any kind of high strangeness or unexplained phenomenon that could happen to you, right?
I mean, I take on a pretty broad spectrum. I don't really think I've ever said no to any experiencer that came up and wanted to talk to me. And I think that they're all related in some way or another.
Right, that's what I was just about to say. A lot of this stuff seems to be connected in some way too.
Yes.
So what are, like, you've worked with contactees, you've worked with people who have had spiritual attachments?
Yes, I actually did a consultation on two possessions in 1 week one time. That was hell.
Okay, now I want to talk a little bit about possession now that you've mentioned that, because I've had different guests on with different, completely different views on what possession is, what you should do about it, if it's even real. So first of all, what are your thoughts on what is actually going on with when someone says, or, you know, you can tell that they're possessed?
Honestly, it depends. Some people take it more as of a religious perspective, but I work more in psychology and trauma and shamanism. So one thing that I've noticed with these entities that you have to have a positive attitude, and the more depressed you are, the more in pain you are, the more down you are, some of these entities will just cling to you and feed off that and make it 100 times worse. And it really is, it becomes something that I have to, I kind of have to walk people through this process about how to get rid of that entity that's holding on to them, whether they think it's a demon or one person thought that it was like someone was choking him all the time. He could feel it. And I think it was because his ex-wife was having some pretty vivid imagery of how angry she was. So I don't know for certain what possession is. I've also had people with like PK manifestations. I thought that was fascinating. But I don't think that's possession either.
Now, for those that aren't familiar, what is the PK manifestation?
So kind of like poltergeist.
Mm-hmm.
So they can use energy or pain or anything within them to act out. So it can be sometimes telekinesis, sometimes they can astral project, sometimes they can move things. I actually have pictures. I'll send them to you later if you want to put the picture up.
Sure, yeah.
Where I had a girl that was in an adoptive family and she just really wasn't doing well. She was extremely stressed all the time. And the primary source of the argument seemed to be between her and the head family member. And one night he went to bed and he said his dog started growling at the completely dark corner of his bedroom. And when he woke up, he had the 3 scratches all down his arm. He had it down his chin. He had it across his face. Like, I think that it was her and her frustration and her anger and her being, you know, in that emotional teenager phase that, yeah, that's a PK manifestation.
Now, how can you tell if at all, if this is something that may be a mental illness for that person, or if it's an actual manifestation of something, some or real paranormal activity, how do you tell the difference? And at what point do you refer them out to, you know, professional help?
Oh, yeah. Well, I'm not a doctor. I've never claimed to be. I'm not a therapist. So
Right.
I have a pretty good sense of, you know, I talk with people and I always appreciate honesty. Like, you know, we discuss, like, if you're comfortable telling me, like, what medications are you taking? Like, what's your family history? Have you ever been hospitalized? You know, and if I feel that, you know, when they're in the red, when they're just about ready to burst because they're so stressed or they're so scared, I always refer out. I take it very seriously. It's actually in my fine print that if at any point during a preservation, I start to feel that they're not okay, that we're going to call 911.
Now, have you,
But for
no, go ahead.
yeah, but fortunately, thanks to social media, I have a pretty fantastic list of colleagues that I can refer people out to. I can ask questions, I can get resources. Probably one of the most heartwarming things for me is introducing other experiencers to each other that have had similar experiences. So not only are they not alone, but now they have someone to talk to about all the things that have been happening.
Now, how often do you think that you're actually working with people that are, you know, having genuine experiences as opposed to something that just may be something, a mental disorder or something like that? Is it more of a majority of people that you think are having genuine experiences?
A majority of them, I believe, are having a genuine experience. But the important thing is whether or not I believe that they're having a problem with lizard people or they're having a problem with bluebirds or aliens or whatever, it's this is a human being and they're going through something. And you need to validate that and give them support, whether you believe it or not. And I remember this was in my presentation when I was at the UFO MegaCon. I asked all of the authors and the researchers and the scientists, I said, you know, experiencers have already gone through Google, they've gone through the books, they've tried to figure this out for themselves. So when they come up to you, this you really are their last resort. They have nowhere else to turn. Like, please care. At least give them, you know, the validation, the support, refer them out if you can, you know, don't just ignore them or say that you don't believe them.
That's really cool that you're doing this because I think more people need an outlet like this to be able to come to people and feel comfortable about telling their
Yeah.
story. Now you've highlighted experiences that children have had, and I find children's experiences really fascinating because time after time it seems that they experience a lot more from the time they're born than adults do, than most adults do. And then at some point, most kids reach a point where they're growing up and I guess life hits them and they stop experiencing these things. And you kind of broke down these age groups and when and how they experience paranormal phenomenon, which I thought was really cool. I was thinking maybe you could tell us a little bit about that, and why do you think, you know, these kids will have this really intense ability to see the other side when they're younger, and then it fades away?
Yeah, so I have three age groups. I have 0 to 6. I have 12 to 15, which is puberty, like the teenage area. 18 to 65, which is a portion of your working, academic, living, busy life. Oh, sorry, there's four. And then 65 to death. So I have four different age groups. And I think the kids are probably my favorite because to me, when they're young, they're so much closer to the source of the universe, whatever you believe that to be. They're so much more in tune with things, you know. No one's drilled it into them that, hey, you're not supposed to be able to do that, or you're not supposed to be able to see that. You know, it's just a nightmare. Go lie down. I think it's fascinating. I had little girls talk to me about seeing little people running around in the backyard wearing clothes. One girl said that the Blue Man, which is actually an inherited entity that goes from like female to female in her family. She said the Blue Man would come into her room and put like holographic blue and green dinosaurs all over her walls to kind of calm her down. But they're great. They're hilarious. They have no filter. Yeah, kids, and I told some creepy kid stories while I was
Yes,
there.
those were cool. Yeah,
Yeah.
maybe you could, if you could remember, if you could share maybe a couple of those with the audience.
One of my favorites is "Don't worry, Dad. I won't let the shadow people bog you while you're sleeping. Just don't worry about it."
Yeah, it's okay.
Another one was you. A little girl. Yeah, another girl, classic time, like 3 in the morning came in, you know, "Mom, the owl's back. It's looking at me." And as a parent, you're like, what do I do? What do I do? What do I do?
Yeah, you have to think, you know, your kid's telling you this weird stuff. Do you shrug it off as this is just my weird kid, or, you know, what is going on here? I think more open-minded parents that, you know, kind of look into this stuff may take a second to listen to it, but most parents will just like, you're just weird, you know?
Definitely. I encourage people to talk to their kids and just explore what they can see. And, you know, one of my favorite questions to ask kids at preservations is, you know, what do you think happens after we die? What do you think happens after this? What do you think happens? You know, they're my favorite. I'm sorry. I just get so excited about them.
What are some of the answers you get to that question?
One little girl said that we come back as butterflies. That was really cute. Nice. One kid said that we come back as dinosaurs because he refused to go to heaven and not be a dinosaur. And that's fair. You should be able to choose whether or not you can become a Tyrannosaurus Rex or go to heaven. I get it. Another little girl that had a near-death experience said that she saw light and she heard the really, really loud humming. But other than that, she had no idea what it was.
Now, you put for the 12 to 15 age, if you're, you know, really sensitive, it could be a very rough time for that age group, right?
Absolutely.
What are some of the things that they can, you know, look forward to?
So I always, when I have sensitive kids that are already experiencers and they're 3, 5, 6, whatever, I warn them and I warn their parents that, hey, this may kind of drop off for a little while. It may maintain itself, but once they hit puberty and their body's going through those changes and they have all those hormones and all that stress, I said, this activity is going to explode and you need to start preparing for it now. And they get really worried, but because they think that they can just shove it all down and it'll go away. But most of the kids that I've seen have had a really incredible difference around puberty, and then after puberty, you know, it slows down a little bit. But I would love to get more research done with teens. I need to talk to more teens about why it explodes so hard during puberty. That would be a great file to have.
Do you recommend for people to do any type of regressions, hypnotic or otherwise?
So I'm one of the only researchers out there right now that does not recommend hypnotherapy or hypnotic regression. I would prefer that they choose an evidence-based method first. So there's multiple different ones. There's accelerated resolution therapy that can help you regain memories crystal clear, which is basically taking your pain and your trauma and turning it into information. There's a prolonged exposure therapy, which I've done, and I remembered things from being a little girl that, you know, the color of my bed sheets and the nightgown I was wearing. And there's another one. I'll get back to you on the other one. But please try an evidence-based therapy first with, you know, a person that's a licensed medical professional, you know, that have an aftercare plan. The reason I don't like to refer out to hypnotic regression is that, you know, you can touch your nose and turn around 3 times and boom, you're a hypnotherapist, or you can get a certificate online. And, you know, a lot of these people, I've known people that got hypnotized over Zoom, remembered everything, all of that trauma, the whole experience came back to them and they're like, okay, well, there's your $75 session. Have a good day. Oh, no, man. Aftercare plan, like no support. You've just been completely and utterly like re-traumatized and then they're gone. So
yeah, that's not cool.
as much as our field loves to suggest hypnotic regression, I don't. And if you do, please do it as a last resort. Please do it with a professional. please make sure that you have support, you know, that you're doing it with people that are reputable and, you know, care about you. I think that that's also really important. So please don't do hypnotic regression. It's not good for you. It's dangerous. And I do know experiencers that over time had been hypnotically regressed and have committed suicide. So it is a real thing and it is a real danger.
Now, up until just, you know, the past few years, this kind of stuff wasn't really even talked about in the mainstream. I mean, who would think to go to, you know, professional and tell them that they're seeing ghosts or they've been abducted or they're hearing voices or, you know, people are usually scared to talk about this kind of stuff out of fear of being ridiculed or being thought they were crazy or something. So do you think that that's changing recently? Have you noticed any kind of difference in more people wanting to talk about this stuff?
Yes. I was up in Ithaca, New York, and I was walking through a grocery store and there were just a group of college girls from Cornell that were talking about the disclosure report coming out. And it was so cool just to walk by and be like, oh my God, that's me. That's my work. That's what I'm doing.
Right.
The normies are finally getting it. But as far as, you know, reaching out to a doctor, I know a lot of people are afraid that they're going to get locked up in the loony bin or, and things like that. And just be careful, you know, go slow and just make sure that they're the right one before you choose to open up. Or you could even open up to a close friend and be gentle about it. Say, hey, you know, you don't have to believe everything I'm about to say. You don't have to have an answer for me. Could I please just have your support during this time?
Yeah. And another hard thing for people is probably the amount of, I don't want to say frauds, but people in this kind of line that take advantage of people, that aren't necessarily honest with people, that just maybe you're worried about notoriety or money. And like you said, they're going to end up hurting somebody by doing these kind of things, you know, under the guise of helping them, but they're really just doing it for personal gain. And there's a lot of people like that, unfortunately, in this community to watch out for. So I'm sure people are kind of wary of that as well.
Yeah, the exploitation of experiencers is rather awful. They just turn them and burn them, whether it's for a book or for the Travel Channel or for something else. And I encourage people, I say, you know, this is your this is your experience. These are your visitors. They're yours. And, you know, they stay yours until you let the cat out of the bag. And, you know, after you've signed 200 pages of paperwork and you decide that you want to recant something, a lot of producers won't do it. They just don't care.
Yeah. But do you think that it's because of all the mainstream talk of UFOs lately that people are coming out with this? And do you think that it's going to continue to where maybe even one day it'll be normalized to have a therapy session because of this?
Oh, absolutely. I'm working extremely hard towards that becoming the norm, that just because something weird happened to you, it doesn't make you weird. So there's a lot more experiencers out there than you would think. Just talking to people, you know, and just asking the very simple question of, has something ever happened to you that you couldn't explain? And then I don't ask them any other questions. And then, you know, we can have a fantastic talk just because of that. But a lot of people are surprised. They're like, you know, I didn't know I was an experiencer until you went over it with me. And I'm like, yeah, like surprisingly, a lot of us are.
Yeah.
And I think that's great.
I think that you're right when you say a lot of us, but I think that it could be even maybe all of us, and most people just don't remember, because I know that they have people that have experiences all the time, and they could have a person that has never seen anything, skeptical, and they're both standing outside, and the experiencer sees a UFO, and the skeptical person's looking at the same spot and doesn't see anything. What do you think is going on with that?
I mean, at least the skeptics are consistent, right? We always know that they're going to rain on our parade. They're there for us. I appreciate right. them. But I don't really care about the skeptics. To me, you should tell your story to believe yourself and to believe in your voice and to keep hearing that story for you so that you honor yourself because you survived. if you go out there seeking validation or have something to prove, or you're trying to monetize this experience, you're going to have a really difficult time.
Do you think it's just because they're so closed off that they're not seeing, you know, like I said, if these two people are standing and they're looking at the same thing and one, the experiencer sees it, the non-experiencer doesn't, is it because they don't want to see it? Or, you know, I'm wondering what is causing the disconnect in the, in, you know, them not able to see these things.
Well, a lot of the time they can ignore it. Other times one of the other people is more sensitive than the other one. Maybe they've had an activating event like with PTSD or trauma, and they're more sensitive to that kind of stuff. And then I know people that things happen to them all the time and they're just like, nope, walking away.
Right.
It didn't happen.
Some people like that. Exactly. In your presentation, you went over things that work for people and things that don't work for people when it comes to this stuff. I was wondering if you could go over a few of those for the audience.
Well, one of them was, I remember we talked about psychedelics, and for people that are trying to learn more about their experience, just some words of advice is please be careful with psychedelics. Know what you're doing, know exactly what you have, you know, have a plan for support and safety. I don't want to call at 2 o'clock in the morning that you took mushrooms and you're trying to find your alien friends out in the desert. And it's happened before. And I know peyote and ayahuasca has gotten really popular again. DMT has gotten really popular again. And once again, kind of like hypnotic regression, you know, you don't want to slam those doors open of all those repressed memories. It's much better to work slowly and take your time with it and become acclimated, you know. Please don't break your brain. Its only job is to keep you safe, you know?
Now, while we're talking about psychedelics, I did want to ask you if, of course, if you're going to try it, be careful, know what you're doing. But for me, I've used it, magic mushrooms quite a few times, and I find them very useful whenever I am looking for an experience, like a contact experience. Now, I've spoken with many people about psychedelics. Do you think that they are kind of like a doorway to this other side, this spectrum that we can't see with our normal vision, but that's probably always around us?
That's an interesting question. I remember talking about that when you have some kind of trauma, that it will literally change the neural pathways in your brain. It will avoid that area to keep you safe. So that's science. That's not just me talking. So when you're under a psychedelic, or when you're under the effect of alcohol or anything else, it may remove some of those blocks and you can start seeing and experiencing things. Maybe you're picking up different channels, different vibrations, different frequencies. I know a lot of channelers like to use psychedelics sometimes, but
right.
Once again, for me, it's an issue of safety. I really don't want people going out there excited to take mushrooms and,
yes,
you know,
definitely.
It's a bad experience and now you remember everything and now it's worse.
Be safe, kids. Don't do drugs.
I mean, do them, but please be safe.
Do them safely. Yes. Okay, so you went over psychedelics, and what were some of the other things that may not work?
Some of the other things that may not work. Well, we've already gone over hypnotic regression. I think another one I had is please make sure that you always have strong boundaries and that you know exactly what you're getting into. If someone wants to talk to you about a UFO and you agree to talk about a UFO and they come in and they say, hey, we also heard that you had some like paranormal experiences and some stuff when you were little, like, can we talk about that? You know, you can say no. It feels good to say no. Just be like, no, we're here to talk about the UFO and that's it. So please have really strong boundaries. They're the highest form of self-care.
Good advice.
Especially with the egos in this field. Like you can't give them an inch. You really can't.
Yes. That is 100% correct. Now what about things that normally work best for people?
Things that work best for people. I always encourage them to start talking to friends and put close family members first, just so they can have a support system. If they really want to go back into trying to remember the entire event, you know, definitely go with the evidence-based methods. Jesus, that's a lot to say. Evidence-based methods of psychology. You know, it's just, it's all about being positive, and, you know, whether or not you have control of this experience or not, you can always control how you choose to feel about it and how you choose to deal with it. So the more positive you are, and the more that you take care of yourself, and the more that, you know, you focus on this stuff, the better off you're going to be, rather than letting it feed into your depression and your anxiety. And then, like I said before, just making those entities even worse, because they just feed off of it, especially shadow people.
Shadow people. Now,
what was his name? Mike
Ricksecker. Yeah.
Mike Ricksecker.
He had a great presentation.
That was fantastic.
Yeah, I've had him on the show a couple of times to talk about shadow people. You said you've experienced shadow people yourself?
Oh, yeah, a couple times. And most of my experiencers with very severe depression, their shadow people activity just shoots up way, way high.
Oh, wow. That makes sense, because for a short period in my life, I had kind of like a sleep paralysis thing where I couldn't move, and then out of the corner of my eye, I'd see like shadow people, and it was kind of like a rough time. So that's interesting. That is very interesting.
Yes.
So what do you think is some of the connections between trauma and the experiencer?
I know that they're undeniably linked, that's for sure. I've had less than 10 people come up to me and say that I've had a wonderful childhood, I've had a wonderful adulthood, I saw a UFO, it was great, that's it. I'm like, oh, cool, that's really nice for you. But it seems to be the people that are the survivors, and the people that have gone through things, and the people that choose to keep going, that have just these incredible experiences. And some of them are scary as hell. And I wonder how they're such amazing, positive, strong people. And I ask them, I say, you know, if you could end it all today, just it would all stop, would you do it? And almost every single time they will tell me, like, no, I don't want it to stop. It's too important to me. It's become a part of who I am. You know, I want to help people now. I don't want them to feel alone. And we have some really amazing people out there. I think the best of us are still quiet, and they kind of have to be because of the stigma, and going through all that and a pandemic and raising kids and being alone it's the loneliest existence I can ever imagine. So whoever has not come out of the closet yet for experiencers, I salute you. You're much, much stronger than you know.
Now I want to talk about what you do with shamanism. There's different, I guess, types of shamanism. I've had a few different types of shamans on. What do you do with shamanism?
So I trained under an actual shaman from Russia, which I think is originally where that word comes from. Please don't beat me with sticks if I'm wrong. I'm very tired. But they are from Russia, and taught me a whole lot about being a human being, that essentially we're just fancy animals that chose to stand up. So when these experiencers come to me with sometimes severe sexual trauma or an experience that dealt with extreme violence and things like that, it's really important to have that mindset of like, okay, you know, these are things that happen, you know, it's okay to feel sexual about it. It's okay to react to it this way, because in shamanism, they teach you about the plateaus of agony and ecstasy and how to interact with different dimensions and how to meditate and how not to go insane. And so shamanism was great for me. I really, really like it. I don't necessarily wander around with a white feather and sage all the time, but you know, I do have formal training in it.
And do you integrate this into the work you do with contactees and experiencers?
Oh, absolutely.
Very cool. Now, could you give us an example of how you may use it with somebody?
I always like to give, well, with consent, of course, but I always like to give my experiencers a hug, because once you get all of this off your chest, it can be a very exhausting emotional process. And I'll give them a big hug. I'm a mom, so I call it a mom hug, where you just hug them with your whole body, and I'll push as much like positive energy as I can at them. And then you can just kind of see them like relax and go, oh, I feel a lot better. And I'm like, that's fantastic. So especially learning Reiki, And then the thing with PTSD, which I have, is that I'm also very hypervigilant. So I can catch, you know, maybe they have really uncomfortable body language, or maybe something else is going on. And then I can alter my interview questions to say, like, hey, you seem kind of nervous talking about that one part. You know, would you like to move on and come back to it later? Would you like to elaborate on it more? Skip that question altogether. Yeah.
Do you find that when people kind of work through their experiences more, the more they talk about it and learn about what's happened, that the less terrifying it is and may have even been a positive experience?
I feel like it has happened. I don't know. There's still so much out there for us to learn. I mean, I know for me personally, I've seen a lot of stuff that I thought was terrifying, and then come to find out later it was some kind of guardian or some kind of sign or something that was there to help me, or something that was just showing me that it was there. You know, it's still scary as hell, but you're like, okay, well, it's not hurting me, so maybe we can explore this a little more. Oh my God, I'm so tired, Chris. I'm sorry.
No, you're okay. When it comes to the contactees that you work with, how many would you say are claiming they're physically taken, and how many would you say are taken maybe in their sleep? You know, it's this, some kind of their consciousness communicating with beings or something like this. Do you think it's more people actually having physical contact with these beings?
The biggest theme is at bed at nighttime. Something about being at bed at nighttime is when they choose to come. And that's when it's in like the physical form of, they can see them standing above the bed, or they have the sleep paralysis, or they feel the sensation of being pulled away out their bedroom window. One time in Albuquerque, New Mexico, I was at a hotel, and I was lying in bed asleep with my daughter, and I got a bout of sleep paralysis, and I felt something grab my arm and dragged me off the bed. And then I blacked out. And the next morning I woke up, I was back in bed, and I hadn't been drinking or anything. And I was like, well, I don't know what happened there, but I don't really want to know. Let's get going.
Yeah, that's creepy. Wow. Now, you've also worked with the military, right? What have you done? What kind of work did you do with the military?
I am a volunteer for many things. I've been in the military world for over 10 years. Best friends, a marriage. I work with a lot of people that are now veterans that are coming out, and they have stories that they want to tell that they can't tell at the VA, things that they saw overseas that they were forbidden to talk about. And to just help them, you know, do peer-to-peer counseling in general. I also have I can show you the dog, but this is Ghost. Can you see him?
Oh, yeah. He's beautiful.
So this is that's a great Pyrenees that I rescued, and I am actually training him to be a TBI and PTSD support dog.
Oh, cool. Yeah, I saw your post on that. He's ginormous.
He's awesome. Like a polar bear, but he's
that's
so
really cool.
They've bonded so well. And this experiencer was having a really hard time and just really had nothing to live for. And just the magic of watching a dog do its work.
Earlier, you were talking about how you've dealt with people who've had possession and entity attachments. How successful are you usually at getting rid of these, or do you have to usually turn something like this over to someone else?
So that was one of the more hilarious things that I realized, is that I'm writing this book. It's a survivor's guide for experiencers, and it's about all these different experiencers and how they chose to deal with what was going on with them. And some people could use religion, some people could use other things. I was just there as a consult, you know. I can't rip a demon out of your body. I'm sorry. You're going to have to find someone else to do that for you. But, you know, just helping them to figure it out, like to decide what's going on and what led up to this, what is actually happening, and what do we want to try to do about it? What are your limits? I think it's the worst when it's kids, because parents are just terrified that this stuff is happening to their kids and they just want to make it stop. So I wish that I just had an index that says, you know, like troubleshooting, like ghost possessions, you know, go here, try this. But now, I'm very serious about it. I do my best to help. And if I can't help that much, I will refer them out.
Do you have any idea whenever a person comes to you and they says they have some kind of attachment or possession, how do you find out what you're dealing with, or are you able to find out if it's like a human disincarnate spirit or something else, something non-human? How does that work?
I had one person tell me a story, but before they told me the story, I noticed that their eyes changed for like a millisecond. It had the vertical pupil. And I didn't say anything. And then they started to tell me that they were experimenting with demonology when they were a teenager. And they thought that they had actually fused themselves to some kind of like Lupin werewolf wolf spirit. And I think that that was its way of like tongue in cheek winking at me of like, I see you.
Right. I've had someone tell me about a very similar experience that they were trying to get rid of an attachment and their eye became a vertical slit before. So that's very interesting.
Mm-hmm.
Now, what would you do to get rid of this?
So for one person, I was teaching him shamanism as well. I don't take on students very often, but this one was necessary. He was in really bad shape. So what we did is he chose to use religion. So he got a sterling silver Irish Celtic cross. He wore that, basically cleansing his apartment, like cleansing his relationships, like literally cutting people out of his life that were causing him extreme stress, seeking therapy. And, you know, just this really intense, it was a really intense 3 or 4 days where I was extremely worried about him. I made him call his grandma. I'm like, you know what? You need your grandma to be praying for you. Like, you need good energy to get past this thing. And it was attached to a very traumatic event that had been going on. But thankfully, working together and with his family, we were able to get rid of it.
That's really cool. Now, have you ever had anything that you were like, no, I don't think I can handle this one. I'm going to have to pass this on to somebody more experience with this particular entity or whatever.
Yeah, I don't like to tangle much with family curses. And
family
I know that
curses.
There are people
could
that
you,
believe...
Could you maybe elaborate on, you know, what's going on with family curses?
So, being an experiencer can be a genetic thing, but some people consider it to be a curse. Like, there was this one incredibly fascinating and horrifying story that every male in this gentleman's family, since someone had emigrated from Ireland, as soon as they turned 45, they started seeing something called the Red Man. And it was this entity with no skin. It was just all flesh and horrible blood and smiling. And the Red Man would gradually just drive them insane to the point that they would either commit suicide or they would be found the next morning, you know, floating in the pool or something else. But every man in his family, it had been 4 or 5 generations where, you know, nobody made it past 45 or 46 because of the Red Man.
Wow, that's creepy.
Yeah, so that one I didn't want to play with. So I was like, okay, well, you have your family curse. Yeah, I referred them out to, they were Irish Catholic. And they had come from a very specific part. And I referred them out to a fantastic person that was great, not only with Irish history, but she just knew an awful lot about a lot. So it can be anything from other shamans to priests to doctors to psychologists to... actually, I've sent someone to an herbalist before. Yeah, I've got a pretty strange Rolodex.
Would you say it helps if you're sending a person to, say, you know, they have a Catholic belief system, that someone that deals with, you know, Catholic entity cleansing or possession or what, something like that?
What was the question?
If someone has a Catholic belief system, would you say it's better to send them to someone who deals with, you know, Catholic cleansing or Catholic possession, you know, or they have the similar belief system to work against whatever their entity they're fighting or whatever?
If there's a positive correlation with it, yeah. I mean, just the power of belief alone does a lot of things, but Catholicism can often be very closely intertwined with their trauma to begin with. So that's why you ask them, you say, okay, like, what would you like to try? You know, would you be comfortable talking to a priest, or would you like to try herbs? You know, some people are all for it. They're like, I don't care, I'll glue a crystal triangle to my forehead, we're getting rid of this thing today. And then other people, you know, they have to kind of test their toes in the water and see if they can figure it out.
When it comes to people who have had ET experiences, do you get a good portion of people who claim that they've seen hybrid children or have had some type of genetic or possibly DNA experiments or fertilization experiments done to them, something along the lines of like some kind of hybrid program?
Correct. I interviewed, I don't remember her name, Shirley something. She wrote The Forgotten Promise, if you've ever read that book.
Oh, yes, yes, yes. I know who you're talking about. So I forgot her name.
Yeah, I went to Wisconsin to actually interview her in person, and talking about her ETs manipulating the conception of her first daughter, them taking eggs and other genetic material, and her getting to meet her hybrid children. And she was just, she's so calm and resolute, and just, this is my story, this is what happened to me. She's an amazing survivor.
What do you think is going on right now with everything that's happening in our mainstream news? Everybody's talking about UFOs. It's okay to talk about them now. We've just had the UAP report come out from the Pentagon. It's very interesting, since 2017, the kind of slow build of all this stuff going out in the mainstream. Do you think that there is a underlying reason, or just maybe it's just the time for culture to catch up with it?
The age of the Aquarius.
Maybe.
For me personally, I know some people take disclosure extremely seriously. They hold it very close to their heart, and I get it. For me, my work still continues whether or not disclosure happens. And in my opinion, it's, even if we get disclosure, even if we get all the answers, even if they tell us, like, yes, everything we've said is a lie, you know, it doesn't take away the pain. It doesn't take away the damage. It doesn't take away all those lives that were ruined. So I just continue to try to help people keep going and reduce the suicide rate and things like that, rather than getting all worked up about Congress releasing the Tic Tac videos. I wasn't overwhelmingly excited.
Right. Yeah, exactly.
It's now, kind of one of those I'll believe it when I see it things.
Yeah. But I think that, like we talked about earlier, it may in some way be helping people to kind of come out and want to talk about some of this stuff a little bit more, since, you know, hey, the news is talking about it. Maybe it's okay if I talk about it. I think that may be one of the good things coming out of this, you know?
Oh, yeah. Definitely opening communication. Even shows like Project Blue Book, MUFON had an explosion of investigative reports after the first few episodes came out, just because people wanted to talk about it. So,
go ahead.
Disclosure is not all bad. I mean,
yeah, we definitely live in interesting times, and I think it's a really cool thing to pay attention to. But be cautious of some of the sources that it's coming from. NK, thank you so much for coming on tonight. For people who want to find out more about your work, maybe they're interested in talking to you about their experiences, what's the best way that they can do so?
So I do have a Facebook page. It's NK Kranda. You can message me there, or you can send me an email at preserveyourexperience@gmail.com. And I would be more than happy to talk to you. I love even just listening to experiencer stories. If you want to just give me a quick email, or if you would like to actually talk, I can certainly try and make time for you. I am a single mom with two kids that never sleeps. So, you know, give me a break with response time, but I'm here. I'm ready.
Awesome. NK, thank you again so much for coming on. Like I said earlier, I think that more people need to do and talk about what you're doing. And I think it's great that you're doing this, helping people with their experiences and helping people be able to talk about it in general is a wonderful thing. So thank you for coming on, and I'd love to have you back on in the future because I'm sure there's going to be more going on we can talk about.
Oh, yeah.
Awesome.
And we can have a scary story night, too, maybe for Halloween.
Ooh, scary story night. That sounds fun.
Oh, yeah. I've got some nightmare fuel for you. Don't worry.
Oh, all right. I'm ready. Okay, it's on. You heard that. Halloween. Scary stories. All right, NK. Thank you so much for coming on. And everyone else, until next time, have an excellent evening. See you soon.